We're here talking about tonight about helping youth transition for campus life. Some of us have children ready to go this September. Some of you are waiting to send them off. Some of you are praying that they will go very quickly. Some of you just don't know if it's going to be sooner or later. Some of you just aren't sure how to feel. But let me introduce a bit about myself before we go too far. Now, hopefully this is going to work. All right. I'm married to Rita. She's my wife. And so that you have an idea where my background is coming from, I have a son. And I came to know Christ in the Chinese Presbyterian Church. Some of you are Presbyterians, and some of you I've known for 25, 30 years or so. Some of you remember me. Thank you for that. I was baptized in 1981. I'm Canadian-born Chinese. That's why I'm speaking English. My mother tongue is English, but my parents speak Tuaishan. Anybody here speak Tuaishan? Oh, okay. That's okay. I left OPG, Ontario Power Generation, in 2009 because I got the call of the Lord to go study in ministry full-time. And I did my master's degree, and I graduated, and this church, Richmond Christian Community Church, asked me to stay on. And I've been here since I graduated in 2012, full-time as a youth pastor here. My focus here at Richmond Hill is on junior high, grade 7s and 8s, but I also have a great burden for grade 12 students. You hear about that later on. I've been serving in ministry initially as a volunteer, as a layperson, for 20 years now. And since 2005, I've been teaching this course, Preparation for University and College, a three-month course that I teach my grade 12 students as they get ready for the jump to university, to college, whatever the Lord has to offer to them. And, you know, the issues of loneliness, depression, academics, drinking, apologetics, defending your faith, how do you look at that transition? And how do you become a man and a woman of God for the long term? All right. So those are some things I want to talk about tonight with you as well. Here's a picture of myself and my wife Rita and my son Robert. He's in grade 9. He came to TC Monday, Tuesday, had a great time, had a blast, and with a bunch of other kids as well. So that's my family, and that's where I'm coming from. Now, this workshop that I'm going to do tonight has a lot of videos. So, and some topics and stuff for you as well. So some of my helpers out back are going to help me with the lights, more or less, as we go. But that's okay. When you see a video, just turn them off, okay? Now, the question is, why are you here? Okay, is it just to pass time? Is it just to perhaps learn something? Perhaps a topic interests you and grabs you, and you're kind of concerned. And as we talk about that, you know, is university and college a dream or is it a nightmare? Are you ready to send your son and daughter off to university and college? And yes, go son, go daughter. Or are you not sure? I'm not sure. I'm kind of scared. I'm kind of, I don't want my son or daughter to go. Some of those issues do happen. These adolescent years are a rapid, intense time of growth, physically, mentally, and emotionally as well. How is our son or daughter adjusting, growing, to become that man or woman of God that you hope that they will be as they go on? Students themselves are seeking independence. They want to be independent. A lot of them just want to go. Some of them just want to go out of town so that they can be away from home and be independent. Mom and dad, perhaps you're that reason. We're not sure, all right? But that may be part of it. Perhaps they're trying to find themselves, their identity. Who are they? Who are they? Are they Chinese? Are they Canadian? Are they Canadian? Are they Chinese? Are they a man of God, woman of God? Where is their calling for them? And parents, you know, you're here probably because you want to guide them, you want to help them, you want to support them. And that's why you're here. So thanks for taking time, because you could have been anywhere else, but you're here tonight. And perhaps the Lord has orchestrated you to be here, to learn something, to help each other, because all of you as parents, you're in the same ball park together, right? You want what's best for your son and daughter. And that's very important to know and to understand. So this workshop is going to help you better understand what's going to happen to your son and daughter, whether that's physically, cognitively, socially, so you can help them successfully navigate that transition to campus life, wherever that may be, whether it's locally, globally, wherever they may be accepted next. So this is very important for us, that campus life and that transition. One of the things we have as a goal, whether your goal or your son's and daughter's goal, is to enter campus and graduate well. Don't you want that to happen? Isn't that the goal for all parents? Well, the point is, we're here now. The question is, how are we going to get there to make sure we achieve that goal? Watch this first video.
Remember when your grandma would ask you what you wanted to be when you grow up? Or your teacher would comment on how good you were at running or coloring? Even your parents saying, "Here's our pretty little ballerina," or "We're so proud of our quarterback." These were the first seeds planted in your heart and soul that made you ask the question, "What could I be?" Let's face it, most of us won't become ballerinas or quarterbacks. But the question remains, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or in essence, what will you do with this life? Do you remember wanting to be a grown-up? Remember hating being a kid? If I could just be big. If I could just drive a car, go on a date, make my own money, stay up late, go to the movies with my friends without my mom and dad sitting in the back row. If I could just do it myself. Well, it's happened. You are here. You are graduating. You are closing a chapter and beginning a brand new one. As you write the rest of your story, remember to work hard. Remember to listen more than you talk. Make relationships that will last a lifetime. Find the right person to marry, and remember, you have to be the right person too. Make sure you take risks. Travel as much as you can. Always remember to laugh. And most important, don't forget to call your mom. She still worries about you. Christ said, "I have come to give you life and life to the fullest." This is what you have the chance to achieve. Life. So go on and live it.
Yeah, go on and live it. So remember your son or daughter as they were growing up. I'm sure that brings great memories to you. How quickly they've grown and how time has passed so quickly. But some of you will soon graduate. How well do you know them at this age of development? That's a good question. How well do you know them? You know, is your child presently in grade 7 and 8? Let me see. We've had some hands before. Does anybody have any sons and daughters in grade 7 and 8? Hands up. Ah, early birds. Well done. How about 9, 10? 12s? How many have children in university already? How many have them who've graduated already? How many still have children younger than grade 7? Okay. So, as we think about that, we have a broad spectrum. And depending on the age of our sons and daughters, and if we've sent them out before or not yet, some of us have some experience, some of us have no experience, but that's okay. But we're in this together as the family of God. So, there's no handout. Now, what I'm going to ask you, think about some key characteristics of your son and daughter. Think about them. And can you describe in a few words some of the key characteristics of them physically, intellectually, socially, emotionally, but most importantly, spiritually? Think about them. This makes up your son and daughter. That makes up us. We are part of those five characteristics. Do you know them, and do you know them well? So the question is, how well do you know them at this stage of their life? Now, some characteristics of junior high students, okay? For some of us who do still have junior high students. Junior high students are grade 6, grade 7, grade 8, and possibly even grade 9 even. See, these are some characteristics of them that we need to know as parents and understand them and be able to be in their shoes. Physically, for junior high students, this is the onset of puberty, growth spurts, onset of acne, more conscientious about the physical appearance. Have you noticed that? 5, muscle development. 6, increased attraction to the opposite sex. It's just beginning. 7, increased physical coordination. Intellectually, our sons and daughters at this stage, 1, transition from concrete to abstract thinking. 2, have the ability to question what they've been taught. 3, they become very idealistic. 4, problem-solving skills are developing at this age. Socially, 1, increase the number of friends. They want friends. Friends is a big issue with our children at this point. 2, stronger desire to be popular. Peer influence increases. Desire to be more independent. Emotionally, do you know where they are emotionally? 1, they're more expressive. 2, they experience lots of emotional ups and downs. 3, emotions may be more extreme. And 4, they struggle with self-esteem. They struggle with self-esteem. They want to be liked, but they don't know who they are yet. Spiritually, they begin to question faith of their childhood. They've moved from children's ministry now to junior high ministry. 2, they no longer accept because the Bible says so as an answer. 3, they can begin to apply spiritual principles to daily life. And 4, they look for ways to experience what they've been taught. Very quickly, at this age now, they want to do things rather than just be told and understand. They don't take things for granted anymore. They're growing physically, intellectually, socially, emotionally, spiritually. Grade 6, grade 7, grade 8, grade 9. What about high school as they move on? So the question, how did you behave, act, and struggle through your years? Do you remember when you were in grade 6, grade 7, grade 8, grade 9? How were you? How did you relate to your friends? Was it an awkward time for you, like most of us? Were you too tall? Perhaps not tall enough? Perhaps your hands, legs, your body parts didn't really match with what you wanted to do? That's what it's like for our sons and daughters at this age. Can we appreciate that and understand what they're thinking? High school students, these are their characteristics at this particular age, okay? Do we know them? Do we know them well? They're physically, they're outgrowing their awkwardness. They have an attractive grown-up appearance. Their appetite is usually good. In fact, very good. They'll eat you out of home some weeks. 4, their physical habits are being formed. 5, they're usually concerned about their sexual nature. Mentally, their reasoning powers are reaching new heights. They're starting to think more, deeper. 2, they like argument and debate. Perhaps you've experienced that yourself. They just love to debate with you. They're very creative and idealistic. Their judgment is improving. Their imagination is usually under the control of reason and judgment. They're usually subject to suggestion. They still want to know what mom and dad think, so you can still suggest to them. Socially, they belong to a clique or exclusive social group, and if they're not, they feel very bad. They want to be part of a group. They need to be part of a group. They need to have friends at this stage. 2, they are attracted to the opposite sex, although not always. 3, they're very much interested in outward appearances. Every time they walk past the mirror, what do? Comb their hair. That's the guys. Girls, do I look okay? You know, every time, every mirror, they'll look just to make sure everything's there and not looking, hair sticking up or something. All right? They want social approval. They're looking at that. Emotionally, their emotion is still intense. 2, they may now be moody, very moody, ups and downs sometimes. They want security. They like excitement. But spiritually, very key for high school students, their religion is personal. Their religion is one of action. Their religion is emotional. Their doubts may increase about their faith. And that's where they're looking to you, mom and dad, to try and help fill the gaps and understand what you believe, because they're watching you like a hawk. So perhaps you notice that. They watch what you say. They watch what you do. And they try to ensure they match. They match. All right. Video 2. This is the graduation stage.
Don't worry. This is just a stage you're going through. This stage changes us. Children walk up to it, and proud men and women walk down. You'll be different tomorrow. You'll be different after you shake the hand and take the photo. You'll be different when you see your name on the paper. This stage is not for sitting idle. It does not entertain apathy. This stage is for going and growing, for moving and maturing and rising, for becoming and expanding and thriving. This stage runs, it does not walk. It pursues, it does not tarry. It transforms, it does not shrivel. It rewards, it does not withhold. It begins, and it does not end until you hear the words, "Well done." You'll turn the tassel. You'll throw your hat, and then you will shine. So go. Go and shine. Walk that stage and shine to the cheers. Walk that stage and shine back at your fears. Walk that stage and shine to the voices that said you couldn't do it. And walk that stage and shine to God who saw you through it. Because remember, it was only by His grace that you could do it. So walk that stage and claim your voice. Grab that mic, speak louder than the noise. Check, check one. We are waiting to hear what you have to say.
And some of us are waiting for that graduation of our sons and daughters from grade 12. And that's going to happen for some of us very shortly. So the question is, as they graduate from grade 12, as they get ready to go, and we want to hear what they're going to say, what awaits them? What awaits them as they want to change the world for Christ? So what are some differences and expectations that our students need to be aware of as they transition from high school to university or college or whatever the Lord has planned for them as they move on? Let me share some things. You know, as we talk about personal freedom, as your sons and daughters go to university and college, as they transition from high school to that new stage in life, what are some differences between personal freedom issues? You see, in high school is mandatory, and it's also free. Your time in high school is usually structured by others. You need permission to participate in extracurricular activities. You can count on your parents and teachers to remind you of your responsibilities and guide you in setting priorities. Isn't that what high school has been for your son and daughter as they've gone through? Whether mom and dad, you've tried to help them, or teachers have tried to guide them. But what happens when they go to university and college? Well, at this stage, you manage your own time. They need to know that. They must decide whether to participate in extracurricular activities or not. They're going to be faced with a number of moral and ethical decisions that they have not perhaps faced in high school. They must balance the responsibilities and set the priorities in life. A new challenge. What's the guiding principle? The guiding principle for high school is you will usually be told what responsibilities are and corrected if your behavior is out of line. Didn't you mom and dad tell your son and daughter if they got out of line, you told them, you got out of line, son and daughter. Change, all right? Or their teachers help them understand when they cross the line. But now in university, the guiding principle is you're old enough. You're old enough to take responsibility for what you do and don't do as well for the consequences of your decisions. They're mature now. They are an adult. They don't have to talk to mom and dad anymore. They make decisions for themselves. So in terms of personal freedom, things have changed. A next stage has taken place. How about the difference between teachers and instructors? Teachers and professors. What's the difference? Parents, do we know and can we help our sons and daughters through that transition? For high school, teachers have been trained in teaching methods to assist in imparting knowledge to their students. Teachers provide you with information you miss when you're absent. How many of our teachers sent homework home with them? Anybody get any teachers to send and bring homework home to them? I've had that happen, right? Because they care for you. They drop it off, all right? Teachers present materials to help you understand the material in the textbook. Teachers often write information on the board, be copying your notes. Teachers impart knowledge and facts, sometimes drawing direct connections and leading you through the thinking process. Teachers often take time to remind you of assignments and due dates. They're very kind, aren't they, teachers today? They do all they can to help your son and daughter through high school. How about in university? Things are different. Instructors may lecture nonstop, expecting you to identify the important points in your notes. When instructors write on the board, it may be to amplify the lecture, not to summarize. Notes at this time for your sons and daughters in university are crucial. they need to start making good notes for themselves. Instructors expect you to think about and synthesize seemingly unrelated topics. They'll teach about one topic, one topic, one topic. You have to pull it all together and synthesize it and put it all together for yourself. Instructors expect you to read, save, and consult the course syllabus, the outline. The syllabus spells out exactly what they expect of you, what it's due, and how you'll be graded. That outline for your sons and daughters will tell them due dates, assignment dates, exam dates, everything at the beginning of the year. And they need to follow it. No, after they tell them, after that first class, they probably won't be told or reminded after that. So they're on their own. They need to remember that. How about studying? Studying is crucial, isn't it? Especially in high school. A lot of our parents are very concerned about the grades and the studying habits that our sons and daughters have. You may study outside of class as little 0 to 2 hours a week in high school. And this is probably just last minute, just checking up sort of thing. You often need to read or hear presentations only once in high school and learn all you need to do. You're expected to read short assignments that are then discussed and often retaught in class. Usually the high school system is such that they repeat, repeat, and repeat so that our sons and daughters in high school understand the process. University is a bit different. You need to study at least 2 to 3 hours outside of class for each hour in class. That's a lot of time. You need to review class notes and text material regularly. You're assigned substantial amounts of reading and writing, which may not be directly addressed in class. The demands academically on our sons and daughters in university are at a notch higher. And they need to realize that. The guiding principle for high schools, you'll usually be told in class what you need to learn from assigned readings. Read this, read this, read this, don't read this, don't read this. And you're fine. You'll be all set for your high school test. University principle, it's up to you to read and understand the assigned material, everything. Lectures and assignments proceed from the assumption you've already done so. So they have to understand. They have to read. They have to keep up. And that's why it's a challenge for them if they don't have good, steady habits. Other than studying, tests. Testing is very crucial, especially in high school versus university. You'll find testing is frequent and covers small amounts of material in high school. You'll find that makeup tests are often available. Teachers frequently rearrange test dates to avoid conflict with school events. In fact, teachers talk to the other teachers in the school just so that they don't conflict with each other. Teachers frequently conduct review sessions, pointing out the most important concept to them. Mastery is usually seen as the ability to reproduce what you are taught in the form in which it was presented, or solve the kind of problems you were shown how to solve. So they do one type of example, and as they understand that process, they carry it into the test, and they're fine. Very good, no problem. University, makeup tests are seldom an option. If they are, you need to request them. Instructors in different courses usually schedule tests without regard to the demands of other courses or outside activities. In fact, you may find that some of your students, your sons and daughters in university will have 2 or 3 exams on the same date. Very common sometimes. Professors rarely offer review sessions, and when they do, they expect you to be an active participant, one who comes prepared with questions. And mastery is often seen as the ability to apply what you've learned to real situations or to solve new kinds of problems. So tests, quizzes are key, and you'll find that they may take a larger portion of a class and a year as well. One test or exam may account for 20, 30, 50% of the school term, especially the first one, if you're not careful. Grades. Grades are important. Grades are given for most assigned work. Consistently good homework grades may help raise your overall grade when test grades are low. Extra credit projects are often available to help you raise your grade. How many of our sons and daughters got over 100% in their courses? I've seen that, right? Bonus marks. They always get for bonus marks, and some teachers are very kind and gracious, and they give them over that. So they can do that in high school. Initial test grades, especially when they're low, may not have an adverse effect on their final grade. But in university, grades may not be provided for all assigned work. Grades on tests and major projects usually provide most of the course grade. Extra credit projects cannot, generally speaking, be used to raise the grade in university and college. Watch out for your first test. This is what I tell all my grade 12 students as they go. Watch out for the first test. It's very crucial. These are usually wake-up calls to let you know what is expected, but they also may account for a substantial part of the course grade. So if you ace your first test, your first quiz, your first exam, you're probably set up for the rest of the year. Because a lot of the professors, if they are hard markers, will use the normal curve. And if everybody does poorly, everybody's on the normal curve, and they move everybody up. Guiding principle for high school, effort counts. Courses are usually structured to reward a good faith effort. And because parents, we need to help our sons and daughters do well, we choose to tell them, do and try as hard as you can, because our teacher will give us the benefit of the doubt. But the guiding principle of university is results count. Okay, results count. Good faith effort is important, but it will not substitute for results. So something we need to be aware of as we try and help our sons and daughters transition. So, it's important for us to have a better understanding of the difference and expectations between high school and university. And some of our sons and daughters aren't aware of the great demand academically, the challenges that they're going to face once they get there. You'll find out, and I tell my grade 12 students, the average drop of first-year students is 10% from the high school mark. Some drop 10%, some drop more. If you're able to maintain and do better, you're probably the exception. So that's a wake-up call for all our students to be aware of as they go to university and college. Personal freedom, teachers versus professors, studying, tests, grades. Students need to understand these differences as they move into the campus life that they're going to experience this fall. Let me give you video 3. University is a commitment, an investment of time and money to your sons and daughters. Now, as you saw that video, some of those people there were not very successful. So what we're saying is that we need to understand that how our sons and daughters did in high school doesn't necessarily mean that's how they're going to finish university and college as well. There's always hope. Some people had to fail first in order to succeed. So don't worry. Pray for your sons and daughters. Encourage them, love them, care for them, and trust that God will use them and do great things in their lives. So as we say, college and university is an investment of time and money. How can your child be a successful campus student? Well, some of the things we can encourage our sons and daughters to do. One, intentionally develop a plan together. Just like we said, there's a goal. You need to talk You need to see what you, what your sons and daughters want to do. What's the plan going forward? Two, identify goals and priorities. What do you want to accomplish and what's important to you and to them? This is where a great time between parents and sons and daughters can spend time together, understanding what they want to do and how you can help them and support them as well. Prepare academically and financially. University, college is an academic challenge, and they need to be prepared for it. And financially, well, who's paying the bill, right? For some of us who have our sons and daughters go to university or college here, it can be upwards of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year. If you go to the United States, it can be upwards of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. You go to an Ivy school, it can be upwards of $100,000 a year. Those are scary numbers. So if we're going to pay that kind of money as an investment for our sons and daughters, clearly we want them to succeed, right? Don't we want them to succeed? Of course we do. And we want to help them do that as well. Manage their time. How many of our sons and daughters are great time managers? When I talk to my... When I talk to my grade 12s as they graduate, that's one of the keys that they tell me. They are terrible at managing their time. They waste time, they don't know how to use their time, but the time to teach them is now before they get to university and college, because that's where time management is really going to help them or drag them down if they're not careful. Practice good money management, okay? Teach them how to save a dollar rather than spending a dollar. Ask for advice. We don't know everything, parents. Okay, we need to demonstrate to our sons and daughters that if we don't know, it's okay to ask for help. Talk to a friend. Talk to others who may have the information to help you as a family and each other. Tackle and resolve problems together and challenges together. You'll find that the times of greatest growth between sons and daughters, families and parents, is when you go through crisis together. When things are going just so smoothly, you take things for granted. That's true for us. It's true for our sons and daughters as well. We need to understand that and help them. Finally, enjoy campus life. For some of us, your sons and daughters are going to go to university, college this fall. 6 months from now, they're gone. Whether that's in town or out of town, it's a different stage in life. Enjoy it. And that's what we all want to do. All right. There was a study done a few years ago called the Persistence in Post-Secondary Education in Canada, reported that students and professors argued that high schools don't adequately prepare teens for the first year of university. Do you agree? Do you disagree? All right. Hands up those who agree. We don't prepare our sons and daughters for university. How many of us disagree? How many don't know? Very good. It's very honest of you, right? You know, one of the things we need to ask is, how is our high schools preparing our sons and daughters for that stage, that leap into university? All right. The stats tell us that 17% of students never complete their studies. That's a scary number if it's your son or daughter. Right? That's a scary number. 14% of first-year students drop out. That's not very good. 55% of university professors and librarians said first-year students were less prepared than students just 3 years earlier. So this is very scary for us if they're not being prepared. How are we then, as parents, helping our sons and daughters make that leap, make that change and that challenge? Decline in students' writing and numeric skills and over-reliance on internet resources, lower maturity levels, and an expectation of success without the requisite effort. Right? How many times as a son or daughter, if they don't know the answer to a question, let's Google it. Right? Do you do that too? Right? You do, right? It's a great help. The problem is, the internet is not always right. And if they can get a wrong answer, and they think that's right answer, and they go to class with that answer, that's not very good. That's not teaching them to find the right answer, the right way, through the right resources. So we need to demonstrate ourselves how to find the right answer. And without the requisite effort, hard work. How do you succeed? Hard work. you can't cut through the hard work. You may try, it may be short-term gain, but long-term, you need hard work. Nothing good comes easily, okay? It's a life lesson. Sometimes it's a hard life lesson, but it's a lesson our sons and daughters need to learn. And if they're not learning from us, who will they learn it from? All right? All right. Consider these keys for our students going forward. One, take challenging honors and academic classes, you know, pre-IB courses, pre-advanced placement programs, and balance extracurricular activities. Studies have shown when we stretch and challenge our sons and daughters, they usually meet that challenge. It's when we make things too easy for them that they slack off. Okay? So remember that. Two, create a plan and study routine at home. Read a lot to strengthen your verbal, writing, and critical thinking abilities. How many of our students still read a book? Everything is online, screen, okay? But we need to help develop good habits in sons and daughters, wherever they read, whatever they read, okay? Because internet is only a tool. It's only a tool, okay? How can we help them use it wisely in all that they do? Meet with your school guidance counselor. They can be your best friend, all right? Explore career options. Get them in the habit of going to ask questions. And it means going to their high school counselors to talk about these things. The counselors have surveys. They have tests they can do to help your sons and daughters pinpoint, identify areas of strength and possible careers if they don't know what they want to do in life. And if there's something they really want to do, these tests will confirm, yes, you are gifted. You have talent in that. If your sons and daughter wants to sing and they can't sing, don't send them to music school. Right? Makes sense. So help them. Help them. Plan with them. Do volunteer work. One of the greatest things for our sons and daughters is to do volunteer work. It takes the focus from always focusing on themselves. A lot of times our sons and daughters think that the world revolves around them. By doing volunteer work and helping others, get them to think, help others. Get their minds off just the world revolves around them. Okay? Start the savings program. Teaching them how to handle money. Okay? Very important. If they can handle money before they get to grade 12, they'll probably be good with money when they're university, first year, second year, third year. All right? How many of us may give our sons and daughters a credit card as they go? Some gasp. That may help them if they're very good at it. For others, no, not yet. They're not ready yet. I'm going to go in the poorhouse. Perhaps. If you train them well, you can trust them. You can trust them. All right. How prepared are you for this next stage? All right. Video 4.
With my dad, even though he's only 2 hours away, I literally have not spoken to him, and he doesn't know where I'm even living.
I'm excited because I'm finally moving out of my house and no parents are there, and I'm just really tired of my parents.
I've heard a lot of kids say, what my parents don't know won't hurt them. And it's such a cliche phrase because we really see it as the truth that, you know, the parents don't really know that this one drink won't hurt me. I hear people saying that all the time, or, you know, they don't know that I'm just an experiment, and if they heard, they'd fly off the handle and never let me do anything social. I would actually say, ironically, I would say I'm one of the more conservative students in my group of friends, and my parents are some of the most lenient.
I would love to go up to them and tell them things that I've done without getting yelled at, but it seems every single time I go to them for anything, I get in trouble or something. Like, I remember I got in trouble twice for one thing because I went up and told them about it before it actually happened, before it actually came, the evidence came. So I got in trouble twice, and so from then on, I was just...
I had one of my great friends say to me, a worship leader actually, say to me, the art of deception has really made me get along with my parents.
Because when I get in trouble, it just makes me want to rebel even more.
Everyone there is living double life. So during the service, sure, they'd seem on fire. But once you step out the door, as soon as it was over, they became the other person. They became the crowd.
That's so true at our school. The hypocrisy is crazy. It's through the roof.
It caused me to question my faith. Like, I question, are all Christians like this? Is what being a Christian is, being fake? Like, going to church, pretending to worship, and then just going out and doing whatever you want.
And they almost brag about it, which is so interesting, that it's not even, they try and keep it hidden from their friends, but it's, you know, who's the worst Christian school student is suddenly the cool thing. And
I'm pretty sure people were brought to church and saw the dual life and wondered, how is this different than how I'm living? All they're doing is just going to a building and saying they're a Christian.
They're more interested in kind of how we bend the rules, and I feel a lot of pressure.
I'd rather be by myself where I wouldn't do anything than rather be with a group who's going to drag me down.
What's the college freshman dropout rate? 26%. Actually, that's right. So 1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry, you're gone. 5, 6, 7, 8. Boom. No offense. You're out of here.
I would stay up till 2, 3 in the morning. I even slept through one of my big midterms.
The fact is, the majority of those students who drop out at that rate have not done anything at all. My research says to prepare.
I really didn't have a game plan going into college. I didn't know. I didn't expect what is this going to be. I just knew, all right, there's going to be lots of parties, and people say it's going to be hard.
I hadn't really taken into consideration the amount, like the cost of staying on a college campus.
Mommy and Daddy are gone, and so I can do whatever I want, especially the sheltered ones, I've noticed, especially at a Christian college or even secular too. All the sheltered ones are free now, and so they just go crazy.
Okay, so what are some things that we can help prepare our sons and daughters as they get to university and college? Well, if they're in elementary and middle school right now, if you're starting to think about post-secondary options, many universities actually offer programs for elementary and middle school students starting in March break. During this week, universities have courses for grade 7, grade 8 students to go and to try it out during March break and the summer. For example, at Queens, they have a SEEDS program for grade 7 and 8 students program to give younger students a chance to experience a subject at university. You can send them there during March break, let them experience a course and experience what university is like. Help prepare them for that transition, okay? Grades 9 and 10, start thinking about programs. So if you get sons and daughters at this grade 9 and 10, it's not too early. Start thinking about what kind of programs. Students need to think about the kinds of subjects they enjoy and the opportunity to change, explore different areas. Many university programs require specific high school prereq courses. For whatever program they're going to get into, you want to make sure they take the right courses in grades 9, 10, 11, and 12 to get there. If you miss it, they may disqualify themselves. In fact, at Queens, there's the EMC program. Okay, Enrichment Mini-Course gives high school students an opportunity to experience a subject at university. You can send them there during the summer. Take a course, experience it, see what it's like. Let them walk around the campus, see what it's like. If they like the culture, like the atmosphere. Okay, it's important. Grades 9 and 10. Grade 11s, right about this time, your student is part of individual university research. Check the universities, where you want to go. Choosing the right university can be based on any number of criteria, whether it's size, school, programs, whether it's my friend's going to go there, I don't know. What is the reason for them to search out, to find, and research about a university? Time to find out is now. Start by visiting university websites, talking to the guidance counselor, researching, speaking to university admissions rep. In fact, Ontario University Fair is coming to Toronto, okay? September 25 to 27, this fall. They're going to be at the Toronto Convention Center. All the universities are going to set up booths down there where you, your sons and daughters, go visit the booths, ask questions, talk about what programs, talk about the admissions requirements, talk about and get your questions answered down there, okay? In fact, you can search the websites for all the universities. Find out what they offer, what the requirements are, what your sons and daughters need to study, and programs to get in there, okay? So think about that. as you think about your sons and daughters getting there. Grade 12, well, for those of you who are already there, your sons and daughters are already applied to university. Final choices, and then they apply, right? Visit the campuses, you are applying. Applications are normally due just after winter break. Just after Christmas, New Year, applications for university are due. In fact, this week, a lot of the grade 12s are visiting the campuses during March break, okay? They got open houses. They're going to visit, see what it's like. Some of them have already received their acceptance, admissions, sort of thing, and they can't wait to get to campus, so that's why they're going to visit. Universities will look at the marks from grade 11 and 12, as well as other supplementary information, such as personal statement of experience. High school will submit all your grades, but you're responsible for submitting any supplementary documentation and on time, okay? Offers of admission are made in the spring, usually from March until May. Some of the students got their offers of university late December, early January. And the reason is because a lot of the scholarship offers go very quickly in the beginning. Some of them got their letters, good news in the letters, last month, some this month, okay? How many have know where their sons and daughters are going in September? Some know. Some are still waiting? Okay, that's okay. There's a lot of pressure on your sons and daughters if they haven't received anything yet, okay? So don't add to that pressure, okay? Because we can do that. Just like their friends, they already know who's got offers. And if you're in that grade in your class and you find out that there's a few of you who are still not getting them, that's a lot of pressure on them as well, all right? So here's the timeline for university. May 28th, the latest date in Ontario University to respond to applicants. Okay, by that time, everyone should know if you've applied somewhere. June 1st, the earliest date students to respond to the Ontario University offer of admission. July 16th, the target date for the Ontario University Application Center to transmit final grades to the university. Early June to August, AIS, the Admission Information Service, can tell which universities still have spots available, openings. So if your sons and daughters haven't received an admission, offer of admission yet, in early June and August, you can find out which universities still have openings there, and that's important to know if your sons and daughters are applying there. September, pack your bags and get ready to move in, okay? You're ready to go. One of my students didn't get an acceptance until early July, and that's really late, okay, because he was on the borderline. But he had to wait until everything was through before he got notified, okay? Watch video 5.
My name is Courtney Gray, and I'm the coordinator of Parent and Family Experience at the University of Waterloo. Your student is going through a confusing time as they start their university career. They're anxious about what's to come, but excited about this new adventure. Not to worry, we have some tips to help you through their first year at Waterloo. Our first tip is to make a communication plan with your student. Think about how often you'll communicate with them, who will make the contact, and how you'll do it. Every family is different, and how you decide to go about this will be up to you. A great tool to use is Skype. You can make a Skype date with your student every so often, and then you'll always be in contact with them and know how they're doing. Our second tip is to make a plan for the first visit home. This should ideally be after the first 6 weeks on campus. The reason for this is that students will have time to feel more connected to their new environment when they spend more time at school. Our third tip is for students to unpack their residence room mostly on their own. The reason for this is that when students can decide where they put their belongings, it helps them connect to their new environment and it makes it feel like theirs. This can help combat homesickness later. Our fourth tip is for you to check in with your student after the first 48 hours of them being in their residence. The reason for this is that after the first 48 hours, they're likely feeling that they would like to talk to someone at home and have a connection. They haven't yet made any strong relationships on campus, and knowing someone misses them at home will make them feel cared about. Our fifth tip is to avoid asking if your student is homesick. This can sometimes be a self-fulfilling prophecy. What you can do is in every communication you have with your student, fill them in on what's going on at home, what renovations are happening, how are family members doing, and how is the family pet. Students don't like to come home and feel like the house has changed and they weren't aware of it. With all these changes, you'll be expected to become a coach to your student. The university views your student as an adult when they come on campus, and the university will want to deal directly with them. We know that as a family, you're used to doing things together, and sometimes you're able to help your students with these things. But now we want you to coach your students through these processes. It's a catch-22. We want you to step back, but also stay involved. As their coach, you can help them do a number of things. Encourage them to take action on campus when they have a problem, and encourage them to find options and different solutions to their problems. You can help them brainstorm these. Also encourage your students to try new things. We have a variety of different clubs and societies on campus that they can explore their individuality with. Don't be surprised if your student comes home and decides that they don't want to study in the program they originally studied in. This is common for many students as they have their own self-discovery. Encourage your student to reflect on the costs and benefits of their decisions and help them come to the answers to their problems. There are many resources for you to use to help your student while they're on campus. We recommend the book Letting Go by Colburn and Trieger. You can find this in the Waterloo bookstore. You can also visit the University of Waterloo website or direct your student to the Student Success Office.
Anybody going to Waterloo? Ah, okay. So hopefully that's helpful. A few years ago there was a report, a study done called Hemorrhaging Faith, Why and When Young Canadians Are Leaving, Staying, and Returning to the Church. And it's one of the first times that we understood a bit about how our young people are doing or how badly they're doing in terms of their faith with God as well. Only 33% of young people who attended church as children still do so today. That's a scary number. 40% of young adults who attended church at least weekly as a child still do so today. That's still a scary number. All in all, about 66% young adults are leaving the church. That's a really big number. Other stats will tell us that 60 to 90% of graduating high school youth leave the church and don't return. And as we send our sons and daughters off from university, to university from high school or college or whatever, so it scares us that our young people, if those stats are correct, tells us that 60 to 90%, once they leave the church, will never go back to the church, will never stand up for Christ, will never follow Christ in all that they do. And as parents, that concerns us. What can we do? How can we help them? Well, one, parents. The study told us that how parents practice their faith has a huge impact on their children. How you, mom and dad, live your life for God affects your sons and daughters. This faith must not be taught, only taught, but modeled. When children can see that their parents' faith is genuine, they themselves are more likely to stay engaged. So it's important. Like I said before, do you walk the talk so that they can see your life meaningful and living for Christ as well? So how you walk the talk and how you live for Christ will affect them and keep them strong in the faith. Because more than anything else, they watch you like a hawk. And whether you believe it or not, you, parents, are the greatest influence in the lives of your son and daughter in terms of faith. You may not believe that, but it's very true. Okay? Two, discipleship begins at home. Continue to live out your faith and model it for your children. Invite open dialogue and be vulnerable and honest about your struggles in life. Okay? Christianity is not just on a weekend thing. How do you live it at work? How do you live it when you go leave home? Whatever you do, how do you struggle and live it out and make it relevant? And if they know you have struggles just like them, it makes it real to them. And that's important, that it be real. It needs to be real to you. It needs to be real to your sons and daughters as they live life together with you. All right. Through the high school years, become more of a coach to your sons and daughters. Allow them to make decisions and make mistakes and learn before they head off for campus. It's easier to catch your son and daughter now when they're home, when you can support them, help them, rather than when they're gone. Chances are they may not call back and ask for that help. At that point, they may ask their friend, their roommate, whatever, for help when they're in struggle. So help them know that no matter what happens, they can always come home because you love them. You won't judge them. And if they don't know that, they'll come home in spite of making bad mistakes at times. But they need to know that, and you need to tell them that. Three words we are difficult for us as Chinese, perhaps to say to our sons and daughters. I love you. When's the last time we say it to our sons and daughters? Right? Say it before they leave. In fact, say it to them tonight when you go home. All right? Let them understand that. All right, parents, do you walk the talk? Tough question. All right, fears and struggles. Clearly, we all have fears and struggles. If we didn't, we wouldn't be human. But each of you have your own fears and struggles about sending off your sons and daughters to university, to college, or to whatever is awaiting them this September. Whether that's for us this year, next year, or the year after, we're all going to have fears and struggles. So it's important for us to learn from each other as a community, community of faith, community of brothers and sisters, community of the church. You have great resources at your fingertips from your church because other parents are going through the same struggles you are. Connect with them. Learn together. Walk together. You're not in this alone. All right, two, experience of God. Many youth and young adults want tangible evidence of the presence of God. They want to be able to hear it, feel it, touch it. For many, when prayers go unanswered, they unfortunately resort to one of two conclusions. One, they conclude God exists, but he doesn't care for me. Or two, God does not exist. So we need to teach our youth and our young children that God's ways are not our ways. Just like Isaiah 55:8. Create an environment where faith community helps them to recognize the God events in their lives. So we spend the time to identify when God works in their lives. Miracles happen each day. Are we sensitive to that? And can we celebrate those God moments? Do we remember those God moments as a family, as a church? Help our sons and daughters experience God on a daily basis. Three, teachings and beliefs. Youth and young adults are willing to dig deeper and find the substance of the faith. Many would rather take risks than be comfortable and stagnant. And that's very true of this generation. They want to make a difference in this world. They want to make a difference for God. We have to let them, release them, trust them, and do it with them as well. The church and parents must provide a place where questions are welcomed and tough topics are dealt with in an honest and vulnerable way. There is no such thing as a stupid question. The problem comes when our young people don't feel that they can ask any kinds of question and talk to mom and dad about it. They sense what's right or wrong in our parents, in perhaps your view. We need to be open to what they ask and search through those answers together. And it's okay to say, I don't know, but let's go find out together. While many young adults are leaving the church today, there are many who have overcome the hardship through discipleship and loving care in an authentic community where they can belong and be a disciple of Christ to live and make a difference in this world. And they want to make a difference in their school life, in their home life, in their relationships, and all that there is. They want to make a difference. Watch video 6.
You know, I felt really hypocritical. Yes, I'm a Christian. But hey, I'll do that beer bong with you right now.
Wow, I'm in college now, and I can go on and do what I want, and kind of just convert it into just all this pressure. Like, I cannot fail. I cannot disappoint my parents.
You're in college, and so you have to buy food, and you have to buy school supplies and books. And
you show me how you spend your money, I'll tell you what your priorities are.
I got like a 1.2, I think, something like that.
First week of school, I was like, wow, I got a lot of homework.
You can go talk to your professor, and first of all, as a freshman, it'll blow her away.
The minute that door shut and my parents were on the other side, it just kind of hit me. I'm all alone.
But I ate lunch by myself for the first week. There's just a lot of different people, a lot of different cultures, and a lot of different personality types coming together.
He said, my roommate is an atheist. My sweet mate is a Buddhist.
There's just so many things pulling at you. You really need to know who you are. Otherwise, if you don't have a foundation for that, you're just gonna fall apart because you're gonna try everything.
Success in sports requires a game plan. Success beyond high school is no different. Get ready today by participating in Succeed.
All right. Some scary things that may await our sons and daughters if you're not careful. Some crucial questions to ask our sons and daughters. One. Why am I going to school? Why am I going to university and college? Do I know? If I ask your sons or daughters, how would they respond? What would they tell me about why they're going to university and college? Is it for me or is it for God? That's a good question. Who am I? If I ask your son or daughter, who are you? What kind of response do you think they would give me? Is it the person in the mirror, or are you a child of God? It affects how they live, their answer to that. What do I believe? Truly, what do they believe? Do they see things through the lens of the world or the lens of the Bible? Do they have a worldview? What kind of worldview do they have? Do they see things from what society and media is telling them, or they see things through the teachings of the Word of God? With whom will I surround myself? What kind of friends are they going to hang around with when they get there? Who are they going to fellowship and stay up all hours of the night studying or whatever they want to do? Christian community is crucial to our beliefs and behaviors. So it's very important for sons and daughters to get connected to a Christian ministry within the first month or two. Otherwise, it'll be difficult for them because they get into habits very quickly. And if they don't get into good habits quickly, they may not get into a church or Christian fellowship for the rest of the year. All right, video 7.
Who is this King of glory that pursues me with his love?
I would definitely say get involved in like a campus ministry, probably, if students don't stay connected in their faith when they get to college. People like me might not ever be Christian.
That you can be a servant of God on campus where God is not tolerated by many people.
I think you need to come in knowing who you are and knowing what you believe in.
And campus ministry, I can't even describe it. It's just so wonderful. You're no longer just a number. You're actually unique. You feel like you have a purpose there.
Look for a good campus ministry that's just, you know, is God-centered.
The best way to stay sure of who you are in Christ and who you are, the person that God created you to be, is to find a campus ministry that you connect with.
Oh, just find a group of kids that's a solid group of kids that cares about you.
It's imperative to have a Christian life in college. Like I said, it's setting you up for the rest of your life.
Okay, just like they said, it's very important. One of the things we remember as followers of Christ is that there is a Trinity, a spiritual Trinity. And that Trinity has a triangle. And what's in the center of the triangle? Sunday school answer? God. Right? What are on the sides? Trick question. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. All right? Now, on campus, I tell my students that there's a campus Trinity as well. And there is a triangle. And what's in the center of that triangle? Same answer. God. But the three sides of that triangle, when you're on campus, there's an academic side that you need to balance. There's a social side that you need to balance, and there's a personal side you need to balance. If any of those sides are unbalanced, you're going to get in trouble. Academically, that's why you're there on campus, to study, do well, and learn. But they want to learn in a social group. So socially, you don't want to be a nun or a monk. You want to do things with friends. So that community is very important to them. But also, they need to grow as a person. Intellectually, socially, emotionally, spiritually, they got to grow. All those sides are important for them to grow well. So our sons and daughters need to remember that campus Trinity and watch out. Now, like we said, the goal is to enter campus and graduate well. Now we're here. How are we going to help our sons and daughters reach that goal? All right? But also our goal is also to be a mature child of God. We're here now. How are we going to help our sons and daughters reach that goal as well? And if we ask our sons and daughters, they think it's not either or, because they think they can do one or the other, but not both. But the reality is, it is both and. It is both and. Two videos.
So you had a blast during orientation week. You made some new friends, learned lots about your program, but now what?
So many new routines that I wasn't used to coming into first year, such as volunteering all the time, with the heavy course load, committing to friends from home and meeting new friends. So definitely getting those routines down is something different.
A few different ways to keep on top of all the new information that's going to be thrown at you in first year is to be constantly checking your uwaterloo.ca email address, because there's going to be a lot of up-to-date information there. Secondly, be sure to check your syllabus for every course that you have, because this will help you stay on top of all the midterm dates, any assignment due dates, and keep up with all your readings.
Checking the daily bulletin on the uWaterloo website is helpful for new updates, as well as just talking to your peers and staying informed of what's happening around campus.
I like to make a calendar at the beginning of each term and book in when I have my midterms. That way, that gives me more of a long-term outlook on a term-to-term basis. One of the biggest changes about coming here from straight from high school is getting used to the pace of the classes. It's a lot more independent. It's really fast. It's a lot faster than what you're used to in high school.
With the course load, you actually have to go and attend your classes. You actually have to do the reading.
Also, assignments, they kind of sneak up on you, so go to class.
There's lots of places on campus you can go to for help that I actually didn't know about first year. There's several different study sessions that I definitely recommend utilizing through the Student Success Office.
You can visit your prof and your TA during their office hours. They're there to help you. You can ask them any questions, and they'll do their best to help you out. You can also form study groups on campus with people in your residence or with people in your class. One piece of advice from me to you, make sure you get a good night's sleep.
I developed so many new life skills when I moved to Waterloo to attend university. I really relied on my mom to make my meals, handle my financial needs, so now I'm basically budgeting on my own, trying to deal with all of that.
If you have a fear of failing, first and foremost, you are not alone. There are a lot of students here who feel the exact same way. It's all a learning process. Some strategies might not work for you, so try new strategies.
I kind of learn from my mistakes. So if I've failed in the past, I kind of take a step back and see that it's not the end of the world.
If you want to seek some assistance, you can always go to your friends, ask them for what strategies work for them. You can talk to your prof, your TA, your academic advisor. You can even go to the Student Success Office, because they have coaches specifically designed to help you out in these situations.
There are a lot of relationship changes that you can expect in the first few weeks.
You're going to be meeting a lot of new people, making a lot of new friends. However, some of your relationships with your friends at home might be a little distant, might be a little different, but no need to worry, because you'll be making a lot of new friends here.
What I do to develop new relationships is get involved. I know first year I was really intimidated to join different clubs and do different sports, but you meet a lot of people that way.
There are always people here that you can talk to or turn to for advice, such as your friends, your peer mentor, and especially your don.
We're here to help you succeed. Check out your first 6 weeks calendar online for a variety of workshops and activities happening across campus.
One more.
This decision to go to college and reasons for going is probably one of the first times in your life where you will put your faith into action. For many of us, going off to college is simply the assumed next step after high school, and we rarely think about reasons for going. Here's the vision we need for why we go to college. College is a calling to prepare us for further calling. So first I'd say, really take this opportunity to explore the calling of being a student. Take your learning seriously. Think through where God might be calling you next after college. You know, if we go to college with good biblical reasons, then we have more to be Christian with when we exit college out the other side.
So it all kind of comes back to who you are, and you have to be comfortable in your own skin. So you need to provide a support system around you who gets you, who understand you, who deeply like you. They're not going to use you or manipulate you to get into the new party or just take your study notes to get to the test. You have to literally just hang out with people that really do like you, that laugh at all your weird jokes, that love your new wardrobe, that support you when you fail that math test.
Well, I think when you get to college, it's going to be a big adjustment in your faith, going to church, being part of a community. When you get to college, that faith aspect, there are going to be some doubts, but doubt's okay. And I think when you doubt, it shows that God is with you. He's walking with you. You're wrestling with Him. So I wouldn't be so hard if there's times when you are doubting that God is with you and God is using that in your life.
Okay, I've talked a lot, all right? At this point, I think it's good for me to bring some university students to come and answer some of your questions that you may have. So students, come on up. Where are you? Come. Okay? I've got three university students who are going to come and sit in these chairs and answer any questions that you may have. Okay? You can tell by the picture. Well, anyway, there's Cyrus Chan, Jeffrey Yong, and Xinyu Chan. Have a seat, young men, young women. All right? The mic is there. And what I'm going to ask is maybe you can introduce yourself based on so that they hear your voice and you are actual people here. So thanks for coming. This is an opportunity for you not only to hear from me, but actually hear from university students, who they are, what they've been through, and you can ask them questions, or me, whatever you like, sort of thing, a question that you would like to have answered. Someone take the mic, it does work, and speak to it so that we hear you, okay? Go ahead, start. Introduce yourself, just, okay?
Sure. So I'm Jeffrey. I went to Queen's University. I actually graduated already 2 years ago. I'm doing a master's at UT right now, and I'm also teaching high school during the day too. So, yeah. I studied life science and education. Yeah, I'm a high school teacher.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Xenia. I currently go to the University of Ottawa. I'm in my last semester studying political science and history.
Whatever you like.
Well, I enjoy school, I guess.
Parents like to hear that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm Cyrus, and I'm currently studying my fourth year at OCAD for graphic design. And I stayed at home, so I didn't move downtown or anything. So for these 4 years, I stayed at home, and I commute back down usually three or four days. And I attend this church.
Thanks for that. So you can see, Cyrus went to Unionville. Anybody go to Unionville? Kids? No one goes to Unionville? Some? Okay. And Jeffrey and Dina went to Bayview, just Australia. Anybody here go to Bayview? That's fine. Okay. Now, so the question is, parents, ask away. You got any questions you want to ask them? One hand at the back.
My brother has interest in the art subject, so I really want to know if in university I spend a lot of money on this subject.
So the question is, do you have to spend that amount of money for the arts, because you have to pay for extra things, I think. I don't know.
I'm assuming it's visual arts, right? Visual arts, okay. So it depends on your program. Different programs have different, I guess, materials fee and overall what they're going to do. The program I went to was graphic design. So basically, I invested in a Mac, like a laptop, and that lasted me for the whole 4 years. However, if your daughter is going to like a traditional, like a visual art, like painting or drawing like that, then you can expect her to invest more in those kind of materials, which might accumulate over time, but it really depends on what program she's in and how she uses her materials. So a little bit of research on that, but usually when you become a student, you have discounts like everywhere. So usually at art stores, you have like 10% or 15% once you show a student card at art stores.
Okay, let me ask this. Cyrus, how much it costs for one term?
Just materials?
Yeah.
Now that you ask me, I can't remember really think about it. I just know that I paid...
Is it more than 500?
Yeah, for first year, including textbook and stuff, was probably around there.
Okay.
Afterwards, I didn't realize to spend that much.
To help you parent, you can ask the questions in Cantonese, because all three speak Cantonese. One student speaks Mandarin. I'm not going to say which one, but they all speak English too. So whatever language you're comfortable with, we'll get someone to translate if necessary. Okay, so whatever you're comfortable, ask in Chinese, whatever, or English, and we'll go from there. Okay, William?
Assuming that my son is going to do a next year, and assuming cost is not a consideration, and assuming we live in Richmond Hill now, would you suggest that he stay downtown near the campus, or that he commute back and forth to our house in Richmond Hill? And why?
Well, so then my parents and I were calculating the costs. It's not a problem?
No issue.
Okay. Well, I would suggest your son, right? Him, to actually try moving downtown. Like, if I had the option, I would have lived downtown. So, like, because I think once you live independently, like, away from parents, you start to learn a lot, and you develop a lot of independent skills, which you won't necessarily learn when you live at home. And at the same time, if it's closer to campus, he might have more opportunity to join student groups, to be with people, rather than having to... For me, first year was all about catching the bus and catching the train. And there was less time at school. So I would suggest, first or second year to move down and try, or even second or third year or something like that. And if he wants to move back, then he moves back. But I would recommend that he lives one or two years in downtown to experience being independent.
Xenia, Jeff, you want to answer, add to that?
I also suggest living downtown, I think mainly because you're getting a new experience and you want him to get out there and make new friends. And one of the main things for making friends is forming study groups and getting help and just being available to meet with professors, the TAs, to get help and study for tests and things like that. And especially at a university, especially first year or second year, during exam times, it gets really tiring, and like your son would be staying up late studying, doing assignments and stuff. So if you have a 9 a.m. exam or like an 8 a.m. class that you need to go to, you'd rather that they're close to school so they could sleep in the extra half hour to have that rest rather than having to wake up at 6 a.m. and trying to catch the bus to go downtown instead. Yeah.
I'm also going to add that your kid will learn how to do laundry and cook for themselves and clean for themselves, which is just a bonus when they come home, right?
Okay. Anybody else? Sure. Why don't you start, Xenia?
I don't think university is so much as a challenge as I came out of high school not liking my faith. I followed it because my parents expected that of me, my parents' friends, my community. There was a lot of shame in not going to church, and there was a lot of shame in... it just felt like I would be dishonoring my parents if I didn't go to church. And so I went to University of Ottawa, which is 4 hours away, 5 hours if you drive slow. I had the chance to just go out and try new things. God brought me back, but it was really good for me to be able to figure out what my faith was for myself. And I think college gave me the opportunity to do that. By the grace of God, an InterVarsity staff worker bumped into me my first week, and she showed me a new way to read the Bible. And for the first time, I encountered who Jesus was for myself, rather than like through the eyes of my parents or my Sunday school teachers or even my pastors.
Jeff?
I think challenges is similar to what Xenia said. One of the things is really you get asked, like, why do you believe in what you believe in? Like, why do you go to church? Why do you say you go to fellowship? Because I think coming up from high school, a lot of students are actually, like what Xenia is just, it's going to church because their parents go to, reading Bible because they're told to do so. But when you go to university, you're meeting a large group of students, some from church, some who don't go to church, some who believe, or some who are clearly against God, or clearly don't believe in God. So they would challenge you. And it's not like they hate you or anything. It's a very open conversation. They want to know, they're curious, they ask questions. So then you're really challenged to ask, like, why do you believe what you believe? And the other thing is, they would also ask things like, well, how do you know the Bible could be trusted? Like, why do you believe in the Bible? How do you know that there is even God? So you may be firm in your faith, but then other people who are unfamiliar to Christianity will ask these questions like, well, why should I believe, right? And so sometimes these questions, we call it, I guess, apologetics questions, becomes challenging to answer because when you're in a church environment growing up, you've never been challenged. You've never been asked those tough questions. Mm-hmm. So those are one of the hard things, I guess, to get through in university. Yeah.
Cyrus, how about you? What do you struggle with?
I think for me, I was able to meet a lot more different people, similar to Jeff, like how there are clearly some people that have no interest in Christianity, like or maybe haven't even heard of Christianity. Like, I met a lot of international students, and so it was a really new experience for me to actually tell them about who this God is and who Jesus is, because they have never heard of it. And so the challenge was for me to articulate my faith mm-hmm. in ways that they understand and not in, like, Christian language, like the jargon that we use when we talk with, like, other Christian friends and stuff. And so in that way, it's like simplifying the gospel, but at the same time not watering down, but still presenting the truth in ways that they understand. And so that was a challenge for me over the 4 years to, like, practice. And thank God I got to practice. So I'm still practicing right now, but I think that was probably the most interesting challenge I got, well, I guess, about my faith.
Okay. Others? Questions? Go.
For Jeffrey and Daniel.
Okay.
Assuming you're staying on campus, how many hours a day would you have for leisure free time?
First year. Did you have any leisure free time in first year?
Please, nobody tell this to my mother. Because I was in the IB program, I came into university quite prepared, and I procrastinated quite a bit. So I actually joined a sports team. I practiced at least 3 times a week for about 3 hours. I spent a lot of time with friends, hanging out. I picked up a habit of watching too much TV. it was great. It depends on the program. Like, my science friends, it was brutal for them. They studied all the time. Actually, even my friends in the social sciences study all the time, but we realized that as first years, we just overcompensated and we thought that we had to study too much. Whereas, my friends thought they had to study too much. I went the other way and studied nothing. So I had lots of free time, but that was just me. Most of my friends locked themselves away in the library and were there 24 hours for 7 days a week.
Maybe to help balance that, could you tell us how many hours a week did you have? Class time, TA time, lab time, et cetera, et cetera. Because of the programs are different as well. That makes a difference.
Yeah.
So how many hours a week did you have? Class time, lab time, TA time, whatever sort of thing?
So I took 6 courses, and each course had 3 hours of class a week. And there was maybe a discussion group, which would be an hour every 2 weeks.
So you're looking 18 to 20 hours a week sort of thing. Okay, good. Jeff?
I was in the science program. Well, I was in the concurrent program, so I also had 6 courses for most of my terms, actually. So I was first year, I had about 33 to 35 hours of classes. This is including tutorial and lab time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about a 40-hour work week, 35 of those hours are already spent somewhere in class. And obviously the other 5 hours is spent doing homework, studying, and actually you need more than 5 hours to do that, so it goes in the weekends and stuff. Usually in terms of my leisure, I was one of the ones that, I guess, locked myself in the room, did more studying. So in terms of leisure time, I did about 3 hours of badminton a week, and then 3-4 hours of fellowship. So that's about, like, 7 to 10 hours of leisure time. Mm-hmm. I also did pick up a habit of watching TV, but that's usually, like, meal time. So, like, while we're eating dinner, lunch, we'll just watch something to relax or something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Question, Phil.
I want to know how's your church life when you live away from home?
Church, it's, I guess when you first get to university, maybe, there's always this, I think the clubs night or like sidewalk sale, whatever, so you actually find a lot of churches that they advertise that you go to. So it's, I don't think it's hard to find a church, but definitely go with, I guess, for a son or daughter, go with that. It's easier to go when you have friends going to that church. And if the thing is, if you go, I think really going to church, it won't be difficult if you are in a fellowship and you have a Christian community, a friends and small group that all weekly go to church that will support you to go to church. But I'm saying that it's easier because for me in first year, it was actually kind of hard. I had a roommate that always slept in. He's a Christian, but he always slept in. And so like Sunday morning in the winter when you have like 3 feet of snow and you got to walk like 20 minutes to church, you don't really want to go. But then when you have good housemates and you have a good group of fellowship, you encourage and you call one another, hey, you have to wake up, you got to go. So there are difficulties, but when you're surrounded with a good Christian group, I think it could be overcome.
Cyrus?
Okay. Well, let's see. So I stay at home, and I attended this church for all 4 years. However, you know how there's like the agape, like the high school fellowship or some kind of high school fellowship either at this church or other churches. And so like after high school, that was it. And then I guess the question came to me, it was like, oh, okay, well, what do I attend now since I'm living at home? Like there was an option for me to go find churches downtown or something where my classmates are going or just not go to any fellowship at all. I will still go to church service, though. But then my parents reminded me having attend like a fellowship, like with other peers, where you can be engaged in small groups and you talk with other people your age is very beneficial to your walk. So then what I did was I had to find if there were any young adults, small group or those kind of things at this church, and there was. And then so I had to initiate. I had to go and check out this fellowship, and it was intimidating at first. But then, when I initiated and with, thank God, like with parents' encouragement, I joined the community life group going on right now. So it's the young adult small group, young adult fellowship at this church for the English service, and so I joined that for all 4 years. And at the same time, I also found. Okay, OCAD is not a really big school, so it's really hard to find things. And so I found actually a Christian fellowship there too. And so I joined that in my second year. And so both here at church and also at school, I also had fellowships. So I was pretty connected in that sense. And I agree that having a community of good friends, good Christian friends, really encouraged me to continue joining church fellowships, like with my faith too. Because like, you can read your Bible, read devotions, all you like, but then if it's only you to yourself, it's really hard to, sometimes talk out some things, ask questions, have people answer. So having a fellowship or interacting with, Christian friends will definitely help in that sense.
I am primarily involved in my Christian fellowship on campus, and I also attend church on Sundays. I think something that's really important for kids to know is that they have the option of attending a church that's not on Sundays. Like if you tell them if you have trouble waking up Sunday mornings, which a lot of kids do, feel free to find one that's Saturday night or Sunday afternoon. Another thing, too, is I think in the ministry that I work in, I encourage my students to treat their campus fellowship as their primary place of ministry, but also attend Sunday service so they get wisdom from their peers, but also from older people. What was super encouraging for me as I was entering into university and asking questions about my faith was that I encountered people just a little bit older than me who were passionate about the gospel and who really loved Jesus and were willing to live it out. because when we get to college, a lot of times our parents or a lot of the church rhetoric says, you know, university will destroy your faith. But I think it's really good for us to equip our kids and say, actually, treat it as an opportunity to explore more things about your faith. Take a look at your faith from a different worldview. Take a different look at your faith from another culture. Because we grew up in the Chinese context and we know what it looks like for us to know Jesus in that way. But what does the white church do differently? What does the black church do differently? These are really good questions for them to explore. Because it just might touch on some of the identity questions that they have as a second generation or third generation Chinese kid.
Okay. Good. And it's important to realize that the world is coming to Canada to study. And they are going to meet other people of different faiths, different communities, different cultures. And that's part of the process as well. Okay? Anything else? Go ahead.
Well, one thing is the young adults, the fellowship here, at least for the Saturday one, because I go to the Saturday one, we are fully aware of university students and how they go in and out. So we are more than welcome to for them to join our small group or a fellowship when they come back out. And we actually have a large number of students who do that. And so we mostly see them in the summer because that's when they come back out. But one thing is, like, I guess I'll encourage your son to join the campus fellowship because he is at Waterloo for, I would believe, like 5 days a week. So that's more of his time. And if he were to spend 4 years there, then I would think that, or I would encourage him to invest in, I guess, the fellowship there, where he can grow to know more people. He can always come back here to church, and we're always here. But the thing is, like, he's only there for 4 years. So I would suggest for him to go and try to see if there's a church he would like to attend there. Or sometimes it might be closer for him, especially around like exams time where he can't come back always, even though Waterloo is close. But if he's living there in residence, then I would suggest him to attend a church and fellowship there.
I remember tell my students, stay there, don't come home. I tell them, don't come back until at least Thanksgiving or Christmas. It takes time to make relationships. And if they keep coming back week after week after week, they will not make any relationships, make any friendships. They need that time to make some good friendships that's going to last for the 4 years, for the 5 years they are there. If they keep coming home, they'll get used to mom, dad, friends here, and they won't there. And they will probably hate it so much that said, mom, dad, can I transfer back home? You know what I'm saying? They need to make some connections first. And make friends to help them through the next 3 or 5 years and not always come home. It's their time to be independent. And their 4 years is 4 years in university that they're not going to go back after that. So let them use this time for that campus ministry to get independent, get to know other people, and see how God will use them in that location. All right? I'm going to close the questions now, but these friends of mine are going to stay. Yes? Okay, they'll stay behind so that after, if you want to talk to them individually, you can do that as well. Okay, so please give them a hand. All right, I'm just going to wrap up with some stuff, and then we're going to close up for tonight because that's the way the time goes. But just like Pastor Nelson mentioned, Frosh Connection, okay? He said it's going to be at the end of July at North York Chinese Baptist, I think he said. But this is an opportunity for your sons and daughters to go to a free barbecue if you're going to first year, okay? And all these three, you guys all went to Frosh Connection, didn't you?
No.
Yeah, okay. So they will. They should go. Make some connections now with university leaders before they get there. So they know a face, a connection, an email that they can talk to. And they can also meet other leaders come. Okay? So end of July, remember that. Check his website. He said it's not up yet. So remember Frosh Connection. Last thoughts. We need to remember not to seek perfection as a standard in our own lives or the lives of our children. Sometimes we seek that as parents. We need to remember the gospel says we're all wrong, sinful, and messed up. But we are dearly loved by God. And so is your son and daughter. In Christ, we are all in process, and often a painful process, of being changed from the inside out. And for us as parents, God's not done with us yet. In the same way, he's not done with your son and daughter. Campus Journey is part of that process for your son and daughter. Help them through it. Love them and make sure they know that they are loved, no matter what happens. So, Proverbs 2, 5 and 6, one of my favorite verses. Trust the Lord in all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, he will make your path straight. Number 6, 24, 26, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. May that be true as you send off your son and daughter to the campus, wherever he or she is going. In my PowerPoint, I have these links that I will give to PP to put on their website so you can access some of these websites. First year supportive students preparing for university, some websites, a web resource that you can go to and check out some information if you have questions. Remember that graduation is not about beginnings, it's about beginnings, not endings. Okay? So I'm going to close with one last video and then give it to the chair. Okay. Here we go. It's called the pickle jar. The empty pickle jar. Thank you. Thank you.